The shir tonight is preparation for Tisha B'Av. And in the shir tonight, I'm going to discuss an element of Kina Chaf Dalet. And the title of the shir tonight is Nevuchad Netzar and Sodomy. So it's a juicy title for tonight's shir. We're going to look at one aspect of the Kina, not the whole Kina. Try to understand on a deeper level what the Kina is trying to teach us. And then move on in the Gemara, where the Gemara discusses different ideas in Nebuchadnezzar. So let's look at source number one. Source number one, I took out the aspect of the Kina that we're going to focus on. And it's, again, it's Kina Chaf Dalet. And it says, Maase aufanem asher bamerkava kehurdu la'aretz zohar harakia kava cholesh algoyim, zohar rakia kava cholesh algoyim lifnei cheruvim ba. So the interpretation as per Art Scroll is that the copper basins designed like the wheels of the chariots, when they were taken down or lowered to the ground, the firmament was dimmed. And it says, Choli Shal Goyim, which is a reference to Nebuchadnezzar, which we'll see, Lifnei Cheruvim Ba. When he went before the Cheruvim, this is what happened. The firmament dimmed, and it was a terrible thing. So the Kina makes a veiled reference to Nebuchadnezzar, but we'll look at the psukim themselves and we'll try to gain some insight into what the Kina is referring to with Cholesh Al Goyim. So the pasuk that the Kina is referencing is Yeshaya Perek Yedaled, a pasuk Yedbeis, source number 2 on the source sheets if you have them, and it says Eich Nafalta Mishamayim Halel Ben Shachar Nigata La'aretz Cholesh Al Goyim. So it says, how have you fallen from heaven, shining one? You fell to earth, vanquisher of nations. Cholesh al goyim literally means vanquisher of nations. Okay, so it's a reference, again, it's a reference to Nebuchadnezzar. But Rashi explains, he gives a pshat as to what the idea is of Cholesh al goyim. So he says, Hillel ben Shachar, look in source number 3, Kochav hanoga hameyer or kekochav haboker. So it's talking about Venus, which gives off light in the morning, the planet Venus. And it says, Zuakina al Sara shel Bavel Namra Shiyipo Mishamayim. So this is a reference to the Kina. Sorry, this is the Kina with regard to the prince of Bavel, i.e. Nebuchadnezzar, that he should fall from the heavens. Nigata la'aretz, Ata Nebuchadnezzar, Shayisa Cholesh al Goyim. So you, Nebuchadnezzar, when you're Cholesh al Goyim, Matil Goral Alehem Alhamalachem Mimehem Yisharsecha Biyom Ploni Umi Biyom Ploni. So what Nebuchadnezzar used to do was he would capture all of his kings, and he brought them into his palace, and he would take lots out, and he would assign each king a lot, and that king for that day that the lot was assigned to would serve Nebuchadnezzar. And it says Rabbasinu Darshu Shayam Matil Goral Alhamalachem. And there's a Chazal that we're going to look at in the Gemara, which takes it a little bit further and talks about the idea of Nebuchadnezzar casting lots. So just to explain what's going on, just to summarize, so the Kina makes a reference in source number 1 to Nebuchadnezzar, and it talks about how the firmament is dimmed when the Cholesh al Goyim, which is the one who casts lot on the nations of the world, lots, and that's Nebuchadnezzar, when he came before the Kruvim in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And where we see that he's called a Cholesh al Goyim, a person who casts lots. So Rashi explains on the Pasuk in Yeshaya that Nebuchadnezzar was the type of person who, when he conquered other kings, he brought them in his castle and he basically tortured them. He would have lots on each day. He would pick out a lot. And that was the day that the king that he captured would be his private servant for the day. So the question is, so why does the Kina reference this aspect of Nebuchadnezzar? So why does it matter? Why is the Kina calling Nebuchadnezzar the Cholesh al Goyim? Why is that important in terms of the Kina? It should just refer to him as Nebuchadnezzar. Why is it the Cholesh al Goyim? Why such a veiled reference? And what's the connection to this pasuk over here? So I wanted to look at the Gemara itself. The Gemara takes things a little bit further, and I think through the Gemara we can gain a greater insight as to what the Kina is alluding to. So the Gemara is in source number 4. It's Shabbos Daf Kuf Mem Tesamud Beis, and the Gemara says Mai Mashma Dahai Chaloshim Lishna Depurahu. So the Mishnah on this Gemara uses the term Chaloshim. So the Gemara wants to know, how do you know that Chaloshim is a reference to lots? like he peeled poor, like by Purim, a lot. So where do we know this from? D'chsev, ech nafalta mishamayim hilo ben shachar nagata la'aretz cholei shal goyim. So well, the reference to Lots is from Nebuchadnezzar, from this pasuk in Yeshaya that we just quoted. And it says, again, how this light had fallen to the ground, the one who cast lots on all the nations of the world. Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Milamed Shayamatil Pur Agedole Malchus, Leida Eze Ben Yomo Shal Mishkav Zachor. So what Nebuchadnezzar would do was that he would assign lots, and he would pick kings out, and he would sodomize them. He would have relations with them. Uchsiv Kol Malchi Goyim Kulam, and the rest of the pasuk says, Kol Malchi Goyim Kulam, and it finishes off. So Amar Rav Yochanan Shin Nachu Mishkav Zachor. So the pasuk, the end of the pasuk teaches us that after Nebuchadnezzar died, so the Mishkav Zachor ended. This homosexuality ended. So the Gemara takes things a bit further than the Pshat. So the Pshat is that Nebuchadnezzar, simply that he assigned lots for the kings that he captured in order to serve him. But the Medrash in the Gemara in Shabbos takes it further, and it says two things. One is that the lots were not just there for them to serve him, but he was doing a lot more with them. He was sodomizing them. He was forcing them into homosexual relations. And not only that, but for some reason, the Gemara thought that it was important to tell us, based on the end of the Pasuk, that after he died, it all ended. So what exactly is this Gemara teaching us about Nebuchadnezzar? You know, why do we need to know this information? Why is it important? Why is it relevant? And also, again, can we use this Gemara, aside from just the Pshat and Rashi, to understand the nature of the Kina, what the Kina is trying to teach us about when Nebuchadnezzar went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So what is that? What is that concept? What's the deeper idea in the Kina? And what's the idea in this Gemara? So one thing that we need to know about Nebuchadnezzar that I'll show you through the Psukim, but it's pretty obvious, is that the Psukim show us that Nebuchadnezzar was a very egocentric person. And look in Shemos Rabbah in source number 5. It says, Paro haya echod mi arba b'nei adam sha'asu atzman elahus v'heru la'atzman. So there are four individuals who made themselves gods, and they harmed themselves this way. Chiram, Nebuchadnezzar, Uparo, v'Yoash, Melech Yehuda. So these were the four individuals. So we see that Nebuchadnezzar, one of his key attributes, which is not surprising, was that he was an egomaniac. He made himself into a god, and obviously it harmed him in the end. But we also see this, that's one just medrash, but we see it openly in the Psukim in Daniel. So if you look in the Psukim in Daniel, look in source number 6. There's a famous aspect story. It's a little bit hard, the Lashon, but we'll read through it. It's Pasuk Aleph, Parak Gimel Pasuk Aleph. Nebuchadnezzar Malka Eved Salem Didahav Rume Amin Shitin Psaye Amin Shis Akime Bevikas Dura Bemedinas Bavel. So Nebuchadnezzar, he made a big statue of himself that was 60 cubits high, 60 amos high, 6 amos wide, and he set it up in this valley in a place called Dura, which was in Bavel. So he made a statue of himself. Nebuchadnezzar Malka Shlach Lemichna Shlach Shtaparnan Panya Signaya Ufafasa Adragazaya Gidvarya Disvarya Tiftaya Vachol Shiltone Medinaisa Lemese Lechanukas Salma Dihikim Nebuchadnezzar Malka. It's very tough. But he says, the Pasuk says that he invited all these leaders, different types of leaders, to this dedication of his statue, his great statue. Va'adayin Miskanshin Achstar Panya Sangarya. I'm just gonna ufafasa adugarzaya gdvarya disvarya tiftaya v'chol shetena shultune midinasa lechanuka salma dihekim Nebuchadnezzar malka v'kaimin lekavel salma dihekim Nebuchadnezzar. So they all went to visit and to look at the statue, and they came to the Chanukah, this dedication of the statue of Nebuchadnezzar, and they stood up before it. V'charoza kara b'chayel, b'chayel l'chon amrin amamya umayav lishnaya. There's this this herald that yelled out to all those who are from different nations, who speak different languages, Be'idana disishmu'un kalkarna masro kisa kastro sabacha pastorin sumponya v'cholzine zimra tiplun v'sizgadun l'tzalam dahava dihekim Nebuchadnezzar malka. When you hear the sound of any instrument, you have to bow down. And look at Vav. Umandi lo yipel v'yiskeid ba sha'asa yisrme l'go atun nura yakata. And anyone who doesn't bow down is going to be thrown into a furnace. Okay, so Nebuchadnezzar, Daniel, I know I butchered those psukim, very difficult. But we see from the psukim that Nebuchadnezzar was this egomaniacal person. So to the point where he establishes at Salem a big statue idolatry, and he commands all the individuals to bow down. I think one of the Mefarshim say in Megillas Esther that that was one of the reasons why they were punished, if I remember, that they were punished, the Jews were punished in the time of Haman because they bowed down to this great statue of Nebuchadnezzar. But we see that Nebuchadnezzar was this tremendous egomaniac, and that was his nature. But we see something further from the Pasuk and the Gemara about the nature of his ego. So the Pasuk, the pshat of the Pasuk is that he was really, he would use the kings to be Misharisim, to serve him. But the drush is that he would be with them, he would have relations with them. So what is it teaching us about Nebuchadnezzar? So the Gemara is teaching us the source of Nebuchadnezzar's egomaniacal nature, which is that he clearly had, from the Gemara, he clearly had this inferiority with regard to his masculinity. And the Gemara is teaching us a little bit about the psyche of Nebuchadnezzar. The idea of him sodomizing all these kings was an idea of him demonstrating his masculinity and feminizing those kings. And by doing so, he was really, psychologically, he was really making up for a tremendous inferiority he had. Because it's one thing for a person to be egocentric, but it's another thing for a person to have to demonstrate to others his masculinity. And we see in the end, Shenachu Mishkav Zachor, what does that teach us? Why do we have to know that when he died, it stopped? Because that teaches us that he was never satisfied. Meaning he kept going. His masculinity and this inferiority complex that he had, it never went away. It was constant. Until he died, he kept doing this to the kings. He kept needing to demonstrate his superiority in a masculine sense over these other kings. So the Chiddush of the Gemara and the Psukim is to teach us that Nebuchadnezzar was an egocentric individual, tremendous ego. But aside from that, it was telling us the source of his egocentricism, which was that it was masking tremendous inferiority on it from a masculine standpoint. And we see that from the idea of the sodomy of Nebuchadnezzar. The Gemara is highlighting the psychological basis for Nebuchadnezzar's egocentricity. And the fact that it keeps going till he dies shows you that it was never really satisfying for him. And it was just a constant need of his that he had to demonstrate his superiority because of this lack of, or this inferiority, which was the source. So the Gemara is teaching us that about Nebuchadnezzar. So, but why do we have to know that, what's the Kina trying to highlight now? So what is the Kina teaching us? Why does it call him a Cholesh Al Goyim? So I brought in the Rambam. I didn't think I had to bring in the Rambam, but it's a nice touch here. So look at the Rambam in Hilchos Avodas Yom Kippur and Perek Dalet. So the Rambam talks about it's the end of the halacha. I just split it up because it's a very long halacha. So the Rambam says, Umakrav tamid shel bein arba'im, v'achakach nekadish yadav v'ragla, v'foshe bigdei zav, v'tovel v'lovesh bigdei lavon. So after the Kohen Gadol brought the tamid in the afternoon, he did kiddush adayim v'raglaim, and then he would put on his bigdei lavon, umekadish v'nichnas l'kodesh hakadoshim, umotzis hakafes amachta. Then the Kohen Gadol would go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where the Kruvim was, the Aron. He would take out the Machta, the pan with the Ketores that was smoking. The Acher Kach Mekadesh Uposhe Bigdei Lavan, V'Tovel V'Lovish Bigdei Zav, U'Mekadesh U'Machta Ketores Shel Ben Arbaim, U'Mitiv Zanero Shel Ben Arbaim Kishar Yamim. And then after he walked out, he would wash his hands and feet again, get back into the Bigdei Zav. The Acher Kach Mekadesh Yadav Ragel, V'Poshe Bigdei Zav, V'Lovish Bigdei Atzmo. And then at the end of the day, he put on his regular clothes. And all the people would escort the Kohen Gadol back to his house, and they would make a big yontif that he left the Kodesh, meaning the Kodesh HaKadoshim, without harm, without being destroyed. So what do we see? We see that when the Kohen Gadol entered into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he had to be in a state of tremendous humility, and it was this situation, the Kodesh HaKadoshim was meant to create a situation of awe, where a person should feel like they're in the presence of Hashem. And not only that, but this idea that he escaped, meaning he was so scared, he was fearful because he was in the presence that he wasn't deserving of being there. And they made a big party that he survived. So I think there's Gemaras that Kohanim Gedolim, I think they would attach something to his leg because it's the potential for death. So the idea is that the Kohen Gadol, when he entered into the Kodesh Kadashim, he was in this tremendous state of humility slash awe of the situation. But the Kina is trying to highlight that the firmament being dim, this tremendous sadness that emerged when you see a person like Nebuchadnezzar, who's the antithesis of what Aaron or the Kohen Gadol is supposed to be in the Kodesh Kodashim. Nebuchadnezzar was this egomaniacal person who had this tremendous inferiority, insecurity, and he was the one now entering into this space, the space of the Kodesh Kodashim, which was supposed to be the space where the Kohen Gadol was supposed to experience the greatest amount of awe and be in the state, the utmost state of humility. And instead, we have this Nebuchadnezzar dude, this Nebuchadnezzar guy, this king, who walks into the Kodesh Kodashim, and he's just this tremendous Rasha. And that's why the Kina is highlighting the Chole Shal Goyim. Because the Chole Shal Goyim shows you the nature of his egocentricity, and that he was the opposite of the Kohen Gadol and what the Kohen Gadol was supposed to be. And it even goes further in the Gemara and shows you where it came from, where the egocentricity came from this massive insecurity, inferiority. And we see that from the sodomy of the other kings. So I just wanted to highlight when we read through these kinos, now we have like an understanding, now we have a deeper understanding of what the kina is alluding to. The whole kina is about, in general, about how the Mikdash was desecrated and all the kalim in the Mikdash were desecrated. But this particular moment in the kina is supposed to elicit a certain sadness and horror at the idea of the transformation of the Kodesh Kodashim from a place that elicited and was a makom of humility and awe, and to a place where a person like this Chole Shal Goyim, this person who was casting lots on Goyim to serve him, he was so egocentric, is now in this makom. So that I think that's what the Kina is alluding to. That's why Nebuchadnezzar is called the Chole Shal Goyim, because it's highlighting this idea about his egomaniacal nature. So that was the first part of the shir, but I wanted to go on in the Gemara, because the Gemara gives us more ideas into the rishus of Nebuchadnezzar. So we started with the idea that he was Cholish Agayim, that he cast lots on other kings, and the pshat is that to serve him, the medrash is Mishkav Zachor. But the Gemara keeps going and teaches us more ideas about Nebuchadnezzar. So we're coming to Tisha B'Av, so we should have an understanding, hopefully, of the nature of Nebuchadnezzar, this Rasha who destroyed the Mikdash. So look at source number 8. It says, the Amar of Yochanan... Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Lashon had said that when he died, Mishkav Zachor ended. That meant Mishkav Zachor, his reign of terror on the kings.
Yeah. If you look in the Mefarshim, they explain that when he died, it means that the Mishkav Zachor ended. And the question is, you know, what? Of course it did. So I was thinking the Chiddush is that it kept going until his death. Meaning that's what it's trying to teach us, that this act of him having these lots for these kings, like it was never satisfying for him. He just kept going until he died. So that's what.
Didn't mean that, like almost they were saying that the trade or the practice basically died out when he. Isn't that the simple shot?
Of Mishkav Zachor in general.
Oh, no, what they're describing. Forget about reality. Practically, wouldn't that the pshuto? I'm asking whether.
No, I thought the pshat is that until he died, he kept forcing the kings into this act, and then once he died, it stopped.
I thought it was a crazy proposition before that to say what I was asking it to mean, but I thought maybe it's just when a king is doing that and it's known and he's basically, you know, using it as a, you know, public display or that everybody knows about it, obviously will increase the behavior in his melucha and his dynasty and how people behave and operate, especially.
I mean, it could be. I wasn't learning the shot like that, but I hear what you're saying. You're saying that this was an activity in his kingdom and it ended after he died. That's what you're saying?
In a sense, yeah. Once,
right.
Because you had a king like that who was normalizing it and glorifying it.
But I think I think the end of the pasuk is where they learn it out from, not the beginning. And the end of the pasuk talks about the malachim sleeping, shechiva of the malachim. So I think it's highlighting the fact that the malachim are now out of the woods in terms of Mishkav Zachor. I don't think it's talking... The Gemara doesn't quote the end of the pasuk, but if you look at the Marasha, which I didn't bring in, he says that the limud's from the end of the pasuk. The end of the pasuk is talking about the malachim, that the kings are able to sleep like soundly. So I thought it was an idea in the kings themselves, no longer having to be subject to this Mishkav Zachor.
Right.
I think so. I mean, I think that's a pshat, but I hear. Okay, fine. So let's go on. Just the next piece. So the next piece is Amar Rav Yochanan Kol Yomav She'osu Rasha L'Nimtza Tzchok B'Peh Kol Berya. So as long as Nebuchadnezzar was alive, there was never any laughter in the mouth of any creature. She'nemar Nacha shakta kol ha'aretz patru rina mechla dad hashta lo hava rina. So the pasuk, it's basically this Gemara is going through a lot of the pesukim in Yeshaya. And look in source number 9. It says, Nacha shakta kol ha'aretz patru rina. All the earth is calm, and it's loud and loudly it cheers. So the idea is that after the earth, meaning the earth cheered, but for a long time, when the time of Nebuchadnezzar was alive, so the earth was, there was never any joy or schok or laughter. So look at source number 10, the Radak. He explains, Nacha, the Ata b'mos ben b'no, when his grandson died, Nebuchadnezzar, v'sara memshel sarasha, the end of the kingdom happened, Nebuchadnezzar, Nacha, Nebuchadnezzar, memshel sarasha Nebuchadnezzar, once his kingship and his kingdom was destroyed, Nacha shakta kolar to patzchurina. The Amar devarim kinegan Nebuchadnezzar kilu mes hu b'yomahu. So the pesukim are talking about Nebuchadnezzar as if he died on that day, but it was is when his kingship, when his whole kingdom was ended, that's when there was joy and simcha and schok in the world. So the question is, of course, Nebuchadnezzar was a horrible individual. We see this from the fact that he built this statue. He was seemed to be a tyrant. Look at what he was doing to the kings. Of course, you're not going to laugh. It's not going to be a happy time. He's not exactly a comedian or anything. So what's the chiddush? What is the chiddush of the Gemara that there was no schok, there was no laughter in the time of Nebuchadnezzar and his kingship? I mean, of course not. I mean, he was a tyrant and people were scared of him. So of course there's no laughter when you're scared. So I was thinking about halacha that's also pertinent to Tisha B'Av. And it kind of highlighted an idea in my mind for what the Gemara is talking about, what the chiddush of the Gemara would be that there was no laughter. Because of course there's no laughter. Like I said, I mean, it's obvious. He was such a tyrant and a terrible individual. And obviously, again, he had this complex where he constantly needed to reassure himself of his masculinity. So of course you're not going to be happy in that time. So what exactly is going on? So there's a halacha that I remembered by Hilchos Avel. And it's the Rambam brings it down. It's halacha lemaisa. The Rambam brings down in Hilchos Avel Parakei. It's also again in the Shulchan Aruch, the Gemara, halacha chaf. It says uminayin sha avel aser b'sheila shalom. How do we know that an avel is aser in terms of greeting? Shneamar heanek dom. So you should mourn in silence. Kol shol shiyam harishonim misha nasan lo shalom ein machzir lo elamodio shu avel. The first 3 days, if somebody says hi to you, you're not supposed to respond. You just say I'm an avel. So from 3 to 7, if somebody asks him how are you doing, he could say I'm shalom. He can greet him back. And from seven at shloshim, he can ask others how they're doing, but they're still not allowed to ask him how he's doing until after shloshim. Most people don't follow these restrictions, but they're actual halach lemaisa. With regard to parents, it's 12 months. So im b'sheila shalom nesar ba'avel kal v'chomer shu asar l'harbos dvarim v'litzchok sh'namar dom. So if you can't even greet somebody, of course you can't talk a lot and you're supposed to be silent and laugh. And then it says v'lo yechos tinok b'yado shalo yivyanu l'idei schok. There's halacha that an avel is not allowed to hold on to a child. Because it might bring him to laughter. He's not allowed to go into happy places like bars or restaurants and anything like that. So I was thinking, that halacha of the tinok, I just remembered, it just stuck out in my mind, that you're not allowed to hold a young child when you're in avel because it might lead you to schok. So I was thinking, what exactly is the issue? What is schok in this framework? So it sounds like the schok in the framework of the Rambam is that schok can function as an escape, as something that takes you out of the state of avelus. And there's two ideas in schok. One idea in schok is just enjoyment. It's pleasure when you hear a comedian and they're funny, so you laugh and it's pleasurable. But there's another idea of schok, a separate idea, which is an escape, that a person, laughter is the best medicine, that when you're in pain, laughter can take you out of the framework that you're in. And you can forget the sorrows and the pain. So those are two frameworks of schok. There's two ideas in laughter. So with that in mind, so maybe the Gemara is telling us that schok didn't exist. Befip kolberia is an idea that not just that the world wasn't in a joyous state, of course not, but there was no escape from the tyranny of Nebuchadnezzar. So the Gemara is teaching us about the nature of the tyranny of this king, of Nebuchadnezzar, that it was such that people were terrified all the time and they didn't have any ability to escape it. And tzchok is a function or has the ability to allow man to escape a terrible situation. So the second idea that the Gemara is highlighting about Nebuchadnezzar was that his kingship and was so ruthless that that the universe or the people, everyone was didn't even have any room for escape. There was no opportunity to escape the ruthlessness of his kingship. And I think that's the next idea about Nebuchadnezzar. The nature of his kingship was such that it was so tyrannical and so horrible, horrific, that people couldn't use tzchok as a means of escaping. So that's what the Gemara says. That's why the Gemara says tzchok. There was lo nimtza tzchok b'pei kol beria. It doesn't say lo nimtza simcha. It says lo nimtza tzchok. So tzchok is really, laughter is really an escape, like we see by Avelis. So that was the situation that was not available in the time of Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? So I'm just trying to follow the Gemara's steps. I know these ideas, like the first idea was tied to the kina, which I was trying to show you the nature of Nebuchadnezzar's personality and where his ego came from. And then the second point in the Gemara is talking about the nature of his kingship. And it makes sense based on him and his personality that his kingship would be ruthless, being that he was such an egomaniac and the nature of his egocentricity, that it was such that people couldn't even escape. They were so terrified. So the next idea, there's four ideas. So the next idea about Nebuchadnezzar is number 12. The last idea is I think the most fun, another interesting, juicy idea. The third idea here is V'amar v'yitzchak, Amar v'yochanan, Oser lamo b'veso shel oser rasha, Shnemar usirim yirakdu sham. So the Gemara says that you're not allowed to stand in the palace of Nebuchadnezzar because it says that the Seirim, which are a reference to the Mazikin, the Shadim, so they dance over there. So Rashi says over there, it's a pasuk. Look in source number 14. We'll skip Rashi. Source number 14 is the pasuk. It says, V'ravshu sham tziyim umalu vatem ochem v'shachnu sham benos yana usi'irim yirakdu sham. So it says, Beasts shall lie down there, and the house will be filled with owls, and the ostriches, shachnu sham, will lie down there, and the demons will dance there. So it's a reference to Nebuchadnezzar's house. And Rashi in 13 says, what does that mean? V'lo anashim v'shul abrios mistalkin amazikin v'nimtza mevatel gzeres hamelech. So you're not allowed to go in there because if you go in there, the mazikin, all the demons are going to leave. And you're not allowed to remove the demons because the pasuk says that the nature of Nebuchadnezzar's house had to be filled with demons. Okay, what is it talking about? Look at the Marsha. Marsha goes the other way. He says in source number 15, Usi'ir mirakdu, ayin perish Rashi. The other possibility is that you might go into Nebuchadnezzar's house and the demons that exist there will damage you and you'll have trouble and it'll affect you in a negative way. So there's two shots of the Gemara. One is Rashi. He's saying that you can't stand in Nebuchadnezzar's house because it's a violation of the Pasuk, which says that there's a Nevuah, that Nebuchadnezzar's house will be filled with ostriches, owls, and demons. And if you walk in there, you're going to shoo them away because they're going to run away from you. And then you have the other way, which is the Marsha, where he says, no, that really you can't go in there because the demons will affect you and you'll be damaged by the demons. Again, so what exactly is the Gemara teaching us? I mean, it seems like, what are these demons that the Gemara is referencing and why can't we go in there? It's a strange idea. So the third idea I wanted to express was also, again, tied to the nature of Nebuchadnezzar. So perhaps, what's the idea of this pasuk? The pasuk is teaching us that the house has to remain desolate and has to be filled with all these animals and owls and demons. So why? Why would it be necessary that the house of Nebuchadnezzar be filled with demons? So the answer is as follows. I think that Nebuchadnezzar, when you're such an egocentric person like Nebuchadnezzar, you dream about your legacy. So a lot of like presidents, for example, many of them are egocentric by nature, but they have these libraries and they think about, you know, what they're gonna be remembered for. And even if you're an evil person, you have this fantasy in your mind that when you die, things will change. That, you know, A, you won't see yourself as evil like Nebuchadnezzar if you're an egocentric person, but B, you have this idea of legacy, that my legacy will be such that people will remember me for being this great individual. And that's part of the fantasy of the ego of humanity. So Nebuchadnezzar was egocentric and to the point where he had this fantasy. But the pshat of the pasuk is saying that his house had to be desolate, meaning this idea, the idea of Nebuchadnezzar as being this tremendous Russia, had to be preserved in the eyes of man. It couldn't be distorted, and it couldn't be one of, now we're going to admire him, we're going to go into this castle, we're just going to look around. No, it had to be a situation where the house, what's the house? The house is the legacy of Nebuchadnezzar, the castle of the king. It had to be desolate, meaning there was a nevuah that his memory would never fade. It would always remain as one of this Risha, of this Russia, of this tremendous egomaniac who was ruthless. And that's the violation of going into the castle. It's either because you're going to shoo the demons away, meaning you're going to distort the memory of Nebuchadnezzar, or it's going to affect you. The other way of going is that the idea is that Nebuchadnezzar and the idea of Nebuchadnezzar and his ruthlessness will have a psychological impact on you that you have to protect yourself from. But either way, the idea is that there has to be a preserve. You have to preserve the memory of Nebuchadnezzar in the proper fashion. So the last idea, like I said before, is the most fascinating one of the shir. So the last idea in the Gemara, I'm just going in the order of the Gemara. So the last idea in the Gemara is source number 16. So this one's a doozy. Yeah, go ahead. Yes.
It's funny, but in the Torah, we see that Torah changed the names of the cities that Bnei Yisrael conquered because they didn't want them to remember Avodah Zarah.
Right.
The example, it escapes me now, but they changed it from there something to, some disgusting name.
Right.
So that you shouldn't associate anything pleasant with this particular place.
Yeah, so I would answer that in this situation by Nebuchadnezzar could be an opportunity for the Jews to do tshuva, because they could remember the past, they can remember the terrible nature of Nebuchadnezzar and what the Jews, how he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and if his memory is distorted, it affects our ability to use the situation for tshuva. So it's different than the Avodah Zarah situation. They didn't do anything against us. It was just that they were of the Avodah Zarah. But in this situation, I mean, this was the Churban. So we need to preserve the idea of Nebuchadnezzar and remember what he had done to us and the nature of his rulership in order for us to use it as an opportunity for tshuva. But if we distort that memory, if we forget it, then we won't be able to make use of it. All right, so one last idea here. All right, so last idea is source number 16. So v'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav, v'sha shebikesh oso rasha laso so'oto tzadikach. So now it came up for the lot of Tzidkiyahu. And Nebuchadnezzar wanted to sodomize him as well. So what happened? Nimshecha orlasho shlosh mios amo. So the orla, the foreskin of Nebuchadnezzar, was stretched out 300 amos. V'haisa mechazeres al kol hamesiba kula. And it went around the whole entire party. Shenamar, Savata Kolon Mikavot, Chasei Gam Ata Ve'Arel. So you are filled with shame instead of honor. Drink and be like an Arel. Arel Begematria Shlosh Mios Havi. So Arel is 300 in Gematria. So you're not going to forget this Medrash. So Arel is 300, and the Medrash is teaching us that when Nebuchadnezzar wanted to sodomize Tzidkiyahu, so what happened was there was this nace that his foreskin, the foreskin of Nebuchadnezzar, was stretched out 300 amos. And look at Rashi, it's source number 17. Amasiba, Molochim, Shayu, Mesubin, V'yoshvin, Lefanov. So all the kings were sitting there in this, I guess, banquet hall. And all of a sudden, Nebuchadnezzar pops in. And it's just 300 amos. It's just his foreskin stretched that much. And we're supposed to remember this. There's a gematria to remember this. So what is the meaning of this medrash, this last medrash about Nebuchadnezzar, that his foreskin was stretched in this manner? So the pshat, I think, the idea, the last idea I want to share with the shir is what I think is going on. So what is the idea of Arelis? So look in Parshas Lech Lecha, source number 18. So the obviously the mitzvah of bris milah to remove the orla, the foreskin, comes by Avram. It comes, we see it by Avram. That's the source, and it's parshas lech lecha. Yud Aleph is the pasuk. I don't know why I don't have the parak, but it says Numaltem es basar laschem b'hayala os bris ben yuvenechem. So you're supposed to do milah to the basar, the basar orla, the foreskin, and it'll be an os of the covenant between me and b'nechem, between me and you. So look at the medrash over there, source number 19. V'hayala os bris ben yuvenechem shi'akiru eschem kol goyim ki atem zera barach Hashem, barei Hashem. So all the non-Jews will know that you're special, that you're, when they see that you don't have an orla, when they see that you're circumcised, so they'll know that you're the seed that is blessed by Hashem. So one idea of milah is that it's what differentiates us from the goyim, and the goyim recognize that that makes us unique, that it really came down, that was a mitzvah by Avram, and it differentiates us in our connection and our relationship with Hashem. And the Radak, he says a little bit different, but not so different. In source number 20, says, what's the idea of removing our orla? Vayala os brisi shekarasi im Avram im zaro acharov. So I made this covenant with Avram. Shiyuli la'am bani eyelahem lelokim. V'yasu mitzvosai asher atzaveh osam bani avarchem v'ashamrim. So I made this bris, this covenant, that they'll do my mitzvos, and I'll bless them, and I'll guard them. This is going to be a reminder of this covenant. And they're similar mitzvos to tzitzis and tefillin are similar. They're all for memory. The os of the milah is the strongest. It's in the flesh of man. It's not outside, it's not external. That's why Mila was to the Aver of man, because most of the Averos of man come from there. It's really the animalistic aspect of man. When a person comes to do an Avera with that Aver, he'll see the Os, the circumcision, Asher Bo, Viskorba. He'll remember what Hashem commanded us. And he won't do this avera. So he won't be like an animal and try to have relations with anything that he finds. Only with those who are mutter, ulahashir zera ulrafua. Right, for zera, in order to have kids, ulrafua, and for medicine. So what exactly is the idea here of this medrash, and what are these mafarshim explaining? So I think we see that we saw by Nebuchadnezzar that he was trying to make up for some inferiority that he had from a masculine standpoint. But when it came to this, to Tzidkiyahu, his orla was extended and everyone saw, all the kings. So what does that mean? It means that really Nebuchadnezzar was trying to establish his superiority, but in reality, him being either not having this special connection like the Medrash says, or being animalistic like a behemoth, it was clear that he was inferior to the Jew, to the Tzaddik, in the sense that he was trying to be this superior individual, but everyone understood, himself included, but everyone understood that deep down inside, in reality, he was really inferior because he lacked in the Mila, meaning he lacked in this either special relationship with Hashem, or like the Radak says, he was just an animal. He's trying to not be animalistic, just like a complete lustful animal. But and a superior individual would not be an animal. But that's what he is. He's just an animal. He's no different than any other animal. So as much as Nebuchadnezzar was trying to hide, you know, he was trying to establish himself as this great king and this superior individual. But the idea was that everyone knew that he wasn't, that really Tzidkiyahu, the Jew, was superior because of the relationship we have with God, or because of the fact that we're not like animals. And as much as he was trying to establish his superiority by sodomizing all these kings, but when it came to Tzidkiyahu, the idea was that he couldn't escape the reality that he wasn't superior, that he was inferior, that either he was because he lacked a special connection with Hashem, or because he was just acting like a complete animal. And you can't really feel like you're a superior human being when you're just acting like a behemoth, like an animal, which was what he was doing. And he was trying to see himself in a certain light, but he couldn't. There was a reality that existed that he couldn't escape. And the others saw him as well, and he was trying to come off as a superior individual, but the kings knew that he wasn't in reality. So I think that's what the Medrash is highlighting. Okay, so we learned some interesting ideas about Nebuchadnezzar's life, and just try to summarize the shir. So the shir started with the 24th kina. I just took out one of the stanzas, which was started with mem, that stanza. So when we come to it on Tisha B'Av, we understand what it's talking about. And the end of it, of that kina, or at least the end of the stanza, it talks about Nebuchadnezzar and how the firmament was dimmed, how there was this terrible loss and tragedy when the Cholish al-Goyim, Nebuchadnezzar, went before the Kruvim, went before the angels in the Kodesh Kadashim. So the question we had was, you know, why is it called the Cholish al-Goyim? What exactly is it talking about, and what was so bad about this situation? So from Cholish al-Goyim, we came to the source. The source was Yeshaya, and we learned that Cholish al-Goyim was a reference to what Nebuchadnezzar used to do. He would cast lots, which is what Cholish al-Goyim means, and the pshat is that he would cast lots on kings to serve him, but the Medrash says that he would do more with them, and he never stopped. Until he died, he never stopped. So the question was, okay, so what are we trying to, what can we establish here? What exactly is the Gemara trying to teach us, and can we try to extrapolate and try to understand the kina in a deeper sense? So we see from all the sources that Nebuchadnezzar was this tremendous egocentric person, but with that, we also see from the Gemara and the idea of Cholish al-Goyim that he also his egocentricity stemmed from a certain inferiority, specifically like his masculinity that he was unsure of, inferior, and that's the idea of sodomizing, that he was trying to establish himself as the masculine, and he was trying to make the other kings feminine and trying to remove their masculinity. But we saw that he was this tremendous egomaniac, but it was sourced in this type of psychology. But so why is that relevant? Because we see from the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, when he entered into the Kodesh Kadoshim, it was really a makom that was supposed to create a tremendous amount of awe, and the person entering was supposed to be in a certain state of humility, like the Kohen Gadol. He was even happy that he survived it. And now the opposite is occurring, where we have this individual who's this deviant psychologically and tremendous egomaniac, and he's coming into the Kodesh Kadoshim, and he's the one there. I mean, it's tremendous, a tremendous sadness, tragedy. So that's why the Kina is alluding to the idea of Cholish al-Goyim. It's talking about the nature of Nebuchadnezzar. It could have just said Nebuchadnezzar, but you wouldn't have understood the depth of why this was such a tragedy. When the Kina says Cholish al-Goyim, it's highlighting the depth of the tragedy, that you have this antithesis of the individual, the Kohen Gadol, entering the Kodesh Kadashim on Yom Kippur. Instead, you have this guy, Nebuchadnezzar, this tremendous Rasha, entering. The second idea was that there was no tzchok in the world. So we said, okay, fine, of course not. He was ruthless. So the answer we gave was that there's two ideas in tzchok. One idea in tzchok is just pure joy. Like you go see a comedian on your birthday, for example, you're not trying to escape necessarily, but there's a tzchok of escape. Like the halacha is that an avel is not supposed to hold a little baby because it makes you laugh. And I think the idea over there is that you're not supposed to escape your feelings of mourning. So in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, he was so ruthless and tyrannical that people couldn't escape it. They had no escape. They couldn't even laugh. They had no way to remove themselves from the tyranny of Nebuchadnezzar. The third idea was that you're not allowed to go into his house. And we said because there are demons there, and there was a haftacha that it would be like that. So you'd be violating the gzeirah if you go in. So we said, you know, what exactly is the issue? What are these demons? So the answer we said was that Hashem, in his nevuah, in the nevuah of Yeshaya, wanted to express that the memory of Nebuchadnezzar should always be preserved. It should never change. And when you go into a person's house, you have the potential to change your perception of that individual. And like Rabbi Unger mentioned, the idea of why was it necessary? Because it would function to help Jewish people do tshuva if they had a proper memory, a preserved memory of what Nebuchadnezzar was about. So by staying away from the castle, that was what the idea was, to try to preserve his nature. And then the last idea in the shir was this crazy Orla story, where Nebuchadnezzar was trying to do what he did to the other kings, to Tzidkiyahu. And at the time, his orla, the orla of Nebuchadnezzar, had stretched out 300 amos to in front of all the other kings. So the question was, what is that idea? What is that concept? So the answer was that as much as Nebuchadnezzar was trying to establish his superiority, everyone knew that there was this inferiority because he wasn't a Jew, because he lacked a special relationship to God, or because he was just acting in an animalistic sense. So he was trying to be this superior human, but everyone recognized that he wasn't that, and they also threw the facade. So and I'm sure that affected him as well. So I think that's what the idea is, that the egomaniac, especially in this situation, who is being driven by this inferiority, A, would never be satisfied because he kept going on and on and on, and B, you can't escape the reality of your inferiority. And he was trying to, but he couldn't. It didn't work. So that is what I wanted to share for tonight. And hopefully when we read the Kinos on Tisha B'Av, at least this one, we'll at least understand why or what it's referencing when it says Chol Ish Al Gadim. All right. Any questions?
Thank you. Thank you very much.